Is the world on fire? Hello and welcome. I'm Andrew Byros. I lead Spark at USD, the university's Institute for Social Innovation, and this is the world on fire? I'm here today joined by my colleague, Austin Choi Fitzpatrick. Austin, it's great to see you.
I'm glad to be here. This is great.
Austin, we normally start this podcast with a question about the world being on fire, but I want to do something a little different, a curveball for you. What is catalyzing that spark for you that's really lighting that fire in your belly, in your brain, in your heart? What are you thinking about these days?
So I'm really excited recently about creativity and collective creativity, and in particular, how people get together across big differences to discover new stuff or public impact in the greater good. And I think we oftentimes, I'm a human rights scholar, a social movement scholar, I'm trained to essentially develop expertise in stuff that's a real bummer. When have things gone wrong, and when do people get together to change them? And so for me, it's been a changing gears to look at when do people collaborate creatively for change. That's been really exciting. That's what I'm loving.
Mm. And that's the gestalt of our master's in social innovation at the Kroc School, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, this stuff folds directly into the classes that I teach. You know, you and I are working together at the Spark Institute. All of these are opportunities to bring students around, not just the world's intractable problems. I feel like in so many ways, we already know enough to get started on making change and doubling down. I have this master's degree in an earlier era in human rights, and I feel like I spent the entire degree focused on what was wrong. And I'm really interested in setting up camp with people who are interested in finding solutions.
I love it. And I forgot to introduce you. I just said who you are. I know you wear many hats here at the university. What hat do you find yourself wearing the most these days?
I'm wearing four hats all stacked on top of each other. What's happening.
Looks good.
Yeah, no. So I'm co-chairing with a wonderful colleague of mine, Anna Mae Duane, a working group at Yale on the future of slavery and emancipation. And we're bringing together about 15 folks, scholars, academics and pracademics who are asking questions about how we can support and nurture a flourishing future that's free for all, and not in the next sort of 20 years, but the 20 years beyond that. And I feel like that's an area that's gotten too little attention in the little world that I live in. So that's been exciting to me. You and I are now working together at Spark. I'm really excited about that. And I'm the incoming program director for the Massey graduate program, Master of Arts in Social Innovation. So those are three hats stacked on top of each other.
That's good. They fit though. It's like they're a nesting hat system.
Matryoshka caps. I love it.
One of the things that I'm personally most proud of that we do with our students for our Masters of Social Innovation and all of our students at the Kroc School, they go on practicums, both local San Diego-based practicums, but we also offer global practicums where our students get to experience, learn with, and learn from leaders who are seeking to champion social and environmental change. And I know you've recently gotten back from working with students in Rwanda.
Yeah, this is the fourth or fifth time that we've gone to Rwanda with students that are from both the Master of Arts in Social Innovation, but also from our other degree programs, Master of Arts in Peace and Justice, and from CMR. And so this has been a wonderful opportunity to go to Rwanda and to have two conversations. One is, sort of what happened here, and Rwanda is sort of burned in people's memory and in the global conscience of the globe for a really atrocious round of political killings and political violence in 1994. And then I think a lot of people's knowledge about Rwanda stops there. But in fact, Rwanda is this amazing instance of innovation at the policy level, innovation at the sort of social sector level, and a real testimony to what focused and determined political will can look like when it's dedicated to transforming a society in a way that's truly, I think, innovative and intended to break free from the past. That is a complicated process. It's politically complicated, it's politically fraught, it's contentious, and that makes it a perfect place to go and talk about social innovation in a post-conflict ecosystem. And so Rwanda is just this really interesting case study. And again, I used to live in the region, used to live in Tanzania. and would go, they did drive my Land Cruiser through, you know, through Kigali. And so it's been a wonderful opportunity to go back to a region that I know and love, and also to bring students alongside not only this historical injustice, but this opportunity to consistently see people showing up day after day in order to innovate around some intractable problems in order to make the world, and in this case, their communities, a better place.
Before everyone got on an airplane and left for this 3-week experience, 3.5 weeks, how long were y'all gone?
Yeah, we're there for about 10 days. 10 so days? Shorter, yeah.
Okay, okay. Before you left, so I ran around to some students, and I was curious to hear them immersed in this context where they're experiencing social innovation, they're learning, they're outside their comfort zone. And so we gave them some questions, and everyone, they have a microphone on their phones. So I want to hear some of the insights and experiences that student had on this global practicum focused on social innovation in Rwanda.
We're going to play that right now.
Let's do it, man. Cool. I got it.
Okay,
here we
let's
go.
Let's go.
Wheels down in Kigali. This is, I think, marks almost a decade of coming to Kigali off and on over the years. I used to live in Tanzania, and I'm always so nostalgic when I step off the airplane and this wonderful, distinct smell of campfires, wood fires, and just nature, this rich fecundity, it hits me. I think it's nostalgia for me, but I also think as I'm standing here right now, it's going to mark the beginning of how many people remember a season of their life in graduate school. So honored to be able to come here with this group of folks.
Rachel Hoddle. I'm from the United States. I enjoyed the tour that we had of the coffee farm and getting to see that process. So I'm also feeling happy about the day. Question: coffee is a unique social innovation. So I think what's really unique about them is just the tours that they provide and how they allow people to see literally the whole process from planting the coffee beans to growing the plants, and then all of the many steps involved with turning the coffee beans into coffee roast. And I think that's kind of a cool approach to their business, to allow people to like meet some of the women in the cooperative and to see the whole process, so that when they're drinking or purchasing Question coffee, they really have a sense of where it comes from and what went into it. I don't really think of a lot of parallels of other enterprises that I've personally have encountered in the U.S. I know that there are groups that give tours and that kind of thing to see their process, but I've never done something like this, so it's new to me. And I think it's a very cool experience to have as a consumer of a product, to feel like you know the process through which that product was made and have met some of the people involved in producing it. And I think that strong model that helps people to feel invested in the enterprise. I'm supposed to answer what ways Kigali is most different than what I expected. I'm more surprised by how similar it is to what I might have expected in terms of like a lot of the greenery, a lot of the like vegetation and bushes, like bougainvillea bushes, and some of the trees and things that I'm familiar with from living in Tanzania and Kenya. But I am surprised just to see how there's like no trash around anywhere. So my first impression is very favorable. It just feels very green. It feels very vibrant. I love how all of the people are out on the street. I like kind of like the hustle and bustle and just the sense of like life and activity that's everywhere. I'm also talking about how Kigali compares to an average American's view of Rwanda or urban Africa. Sadly, I think that an average American probably doesn't have a very clear or strong impression of what Rwanda is like. But I suppose that if they do think about it, the thing that comes to mind is probably the Rwandan genocide in 94. So things have changed a lot since then, very evidently. And there's been tons of development and a lot of progress. So the average American's view is probably hasn't quite caught up with all of the progress that Rwanda has made and all of the like industry and all of the activity that is happening in Rwanda, and that it's exciting to see and to be a part of.
My name is Jacob Knoll. I'm originally from South Dakota. Zipline is one of those things that Rwanda provided the space for that type of innovation to like flourish and kind of like gain a foothold and test the capability of something like aerial delivery of small packages specific to pharmaceuticals and blood and whatnot, which is super interesting and obviously potentially life-saving. I think from a contextual standpoint, like it really depends on if that could be successful elsewhere. And smaller countries, I think it's very possible. Air traffic is obviously a difficulty depending on the flight ceiling of the actual UAS. But just generally speaking, in remote, places where you need to reach remote areas, it's definitely an innovation that could benefit the people, the villages and whatnot. I think the biggest hurdle is just, broad scale adoption, and then how is that service ultimately funded, paid for, because people in remote and rural areas generally have less means to pay for things like that. So does the government help subsidize? Where how does that work, and ultimately is it sustainable long term from a financial standpoint? What aspects of Zipline structure do I think contribute most to its success? The ability for them to raise almost $300 million in capital in order to do what they're doing has given them a really long runway, no pun intended, and allowed them to really kind of vet out and iron out some of the wrinkles that they've had, I'm sure, operationally, working in different spaces, and there's a ton of potential there. We'll have to see if like a vertical platform in the future might also be beneficial in a more urban environment. But as long as the company continues to raise money and they extend their runway, there's definitely potential to see something scale in that space, and potentially other developing countries.
My name is Tasha Matthews. I am from San Diego, California.
It was great learning about Azizi Life, Question Coffee, Zipline, and all the different cooperatives on the tours, being in the former president's home, learning about the history of Rwanda beforehand, before colonial times, during the conflict, and after that. It was great meeting Chiusa, Leandre, and meeting some other people like Cindy, Dr. Cindy, who talked about mental health. Like, there's so many highlights. I'm also thankful, and I think it's important to look at the yoga session that we had and when she was saying to have three reasons why you're grateful. I think that's really important. And I'm thankful that I have family and friends and community at USD to support me through trials and through issues that happen and arise. A lot of people were very kind. There's so many people, and a lot of the people in my group or in this cohort tried the very best they can. And I think that's the highlight, is that everyone's simply doing the best they can, given their cultural subsets and their own brokenness or their own strengths, right? So I think that's ultimately what I've learned about being on this trip. Another highlight was walking barefoot in certain spots, like doing yoga and walking barefoot in the grass, or doing Azizi Life activities and walking barefoot to the bus all the way up the hill. That was kind of cool. Even though it hurt, I felt like it was very healing to do that. And we see the fullness of humanity in Rwanda, where we're learning about a conflict and not everybody agrees about everything about it. And then we're learning about how people are overcoming this stuff too at the same time. I'm super thrilled that I got to do some really cool experiences, like music and even music in the sense of the villagers and greeting us. That was really cool. I love that, you know, some of the other observations I was making was the space and the land and the roads and the greenery. I was expecting a lot of greenery, so that was cool to actually see. But I was also kind of enjoying the different colors and beauty of the different arts and the different ways in which women dress. And that was just a cool, unique aspect of things. It's interesting to see folks on the same motorcycle brand as a form of conformity and being able to represent their nation with pride and with honor. And so as a perspective of something that resonates with Rwandans who utilize that, who resonate with that idea. We just had a very heavy, long day. We went to the Kigali Genocide Memorial and walked through the exhibits documenting the genocide in 1994. And then there were also some other exhibits about other genocides over the years, how they came to be, what happened. And then another exhibit that really struck me was the children that went missing and were killed during the genocide, and a tribute to them. It was a really difficult but important day. I think a lot of people were having trouble processing their emotions after walking through that museum. I know I definitely was, and after walking out and knowing that you could go down into the gardens, which were next to the mass graves of a lot of people, was really difficult to contend with. We had a discussion after about the way that the genocide was framed, which I think is really important to talk about. But honestly, for me, I just needed to sit with what we saw more, because I think regardless of how you talk about the genocide or what language you use, and there are obviously different political consequences to how you speak about it, it was just such an awful, awful thing that occurred that really shaped Rwanda's landscape moving forward, and how all of their development really has had security in mind and bringing safety to the citizens of Rwanda again, which I think has shaped their conception of freedom as well, which is really interesting to me. Feeling really drained, but also I think I've got a lot more foundational knowledge, which was really necessary to, you know, move forward and learn more about the city and the country. So I think it definitely reinforces a lot of what I've heard and seen so far, even after the city tour and talking about the genocide, the President Habyarimana's house and everything. But I also think that it definitely will give me a lot to think about moving forward and change my perception of how I've viewed the city so far.
To London,
And it's wonderful to see folks peel off into their own side adventures, going to their own places. We'll rendezvous in San Diego in just a few weeks, but really, really looking forward to seeing everybody again and stoked we wrapped this trip well.
I love hearing the students' insights and reflections on the bus. Amazing. Austin, I need to get on this trip. Are you going back soon?
You want to go on this trip? We're going next year. We go in January. USD has this wonderful intercession sort of moment between Christmas and then when in late January of every year, the spring semester starts. And there's this beautiful 3 weeks right there when we're able to take trips. So we're going back to Rwanda next year. So like and subscribe. But then also, you know, we go to Rwanda, but our colleagues go to, you know, sort of places all over the world, Northern Ireland to Armenia and Georgia to Washington, D.C. and Colombia. And there's this like sort of steady series of trips that folks go on. But yeah, Rwanda's been so far has been a pretty steady offering. Yeah.
Do you think going to Rwanda would be good for, I'll have a 13-month-old by then?
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah?
It's perfect. You know what? I moved to Tanzania with a 13-month-old.
Oh,
true
gosh.
Story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
We can do it. Oh yeah, we can do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it.
It's perfect. If you're listening, this is totally going to happen.
How is getting students out into the world to learn from and with changemakers? How is that emblematic of the Masters of Arts in Social Innovation and just the learning that we seek to accomplish here at the Kroc School and the University of San Diego?
Yes, it's a great question. And I sort of said this at the top when we were talking, but you know, I started my career about a little more over 20 years ago. And then there were just this handful of places that if you wanted to be a change maker, we didn't have the term at the time, I don't think, but I certainly didn't. Then, you know, you could go into, you could work for the government, you could go work for a big NGO, or you could go work for some sort of religious affiliated group, or you could join some sort of like really voluntary charity sort of thing, or you could sort of go out on your own and, you know, go someplace else and kind of just make your way. And that world of the last 20 years, for all sorts of reasons, has radically changed. The philanthropic sector is way more diverse. There are way more businesses trying to ask, what are we doing with our bottom line and how can we be part of social change? There are way more nonprofits who are exploring hybrid structures of revenue and of impact. It's just like the number of actors and the number of paths to impact has really effloresced. It's grown. It's really increased. And so for me, it's amazing to go to Rwanda. And this is just a little note here. We go to Rwanda and we do not go talk to nonprofits. We go talk to like impact-focused social enterprises. And that's mind-blowing. It's like sort of like evidence, proof of the concept for Massey students. But it's really mind-blowing for students that are more accustomed to sort of more traditional human rights and development nonprofit sectors to see folks with the same principles, same training, same outlook, totally different modality. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, just to bring this back to Massey is fundamentally about what are these additional ways of pursuing impact and unlocking value that is not just at the economic level, but is at the social level. And going all the way back to this thing I said earlier, I'm excited about, we need more utopias. We need like more paths to change. We need more ways of getting involved in the change sector. We need more like bigger and better goals of like human flourishing and of like trans species flourishing. We need to be like a blessing out onto the planet. And I feel like we have just all a handful of little pathways to do that in Massey. And other programs at Kroc are asking, like, what other pathways are there that we can either become part of or have a hand in imagining and creating?
And students, they're not going to accomplish those goals just by sitting in the four walls of a classroom. Yes, there's a place for that. It also requires them to get out and experience and learn from the world if they're going to have an impact.
You're an expert in this, right? I mean, this is like the worst thing to be doing is standing in front of a classroom, everybody facing me and lecturing them, right? Mm-hmm. So how can we like disrupt that model inside the classroom? But even better, how can we get out of the classroom in order to really learn?
Well, that's why I'm proud to work here at the University of San Diego, the Kroc School. Let's just keep creating more experiences like that for students because our world certainly needs them out there.
High five.
All right, brother. Well, thank you so much for this.
This is great. I love it. Let's do it again.
Let's do it, please. All right.